For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The Islamic State says it was behind a suicide attack on a NATO convoy in Afghanistan that killed at least 8 people. Authorities in Kabul say all the victims were civilians, although 3 US service members were among around 25 other people who were injured. The attack on the convoy of military vehicles happened next to the US embassy in Kabul. The EU's chief negotiator on Brexit says Britain must settle its accounts before it leaves the bloc, but says this is not a punishment. Michel Barnier was speaking after Britain's Financial Times newspaper claimed the bill Brussels will seek for the so-called divorce settlement has risen from €60 billion to €100 billion. UK officials say they don't recognise this figure and won't be paying it. Publishing his Brexit mandate, Mr. Barnier also said no figure had been agreed for the exit bill, and speaking through an interpreter said it would simply be a settling of accounts.
Now, this is not a punishment, nor is it an exit tax of some kind. The Union and the United Kingdom have mutual commitments. They've committed to financing programs and projects together. We decided these programs together, and we financed them together.
2/3 of left-wing French voters who took part in an online poll say they'll stay away from the ballot box on Sunday, raising new fears low turnout could help far-right candidate Marine Le Pen. Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron face off in a TV debate later with just 3 days to go, Elena Casas reports.
It's one of the biggest uncertainties in this presidential runoff. How many left-wingers who are repulsed by Marine Le Pen, but also oppose Emmanuel Macron's economic policies, won't turn out to vote at all. 2/3 of those who answered an online survey said they couldn't bring themselves to cast a ballot for either candidate, but only around 4% of the left-wing electorate took part. The poll won't calm fears. Le Pen's claims Macron is the candidate of global finance are being heard by voters. The two candidates face off in a Crunch TV debate on Wednesday evening. Macron has fallen 5 points in the polls in a week and badly needs good performance.
India's summoned Pakistan's envoy and lodged an official complaint over the alleged beheading of 2 of its soldiers. Pakistan calls India's allegations false. From Delhi, Neha Punia.
India has asked Pakistan to act immediately against those soldiers believed to be behind the beheading of 2 Indian personnel. India claims that a Pakistani army team crossed the border and attacked 2 Indian soldiers out on a patrol. India alleges this was a premeditated attack. Ties between India and Pakistan have been fraught since 22 soldiers were killed in a terror attack on an Indian army base last year. India has blamed Pakistan for that attack, a charge Pakistan has denied.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and a warm welcome to the programme to you. What is it today? The 3rd of May 2017, Wednesday's programme. My name is Richie Allen. I hope you're in good form. You can tweet me from now until the end of the programme on @RichieAllenShow. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Is this your show? Let's get on with it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And we're broadcasting live on alternate current radio, Fab Radio 2 as well. Tune in radio, get the tune in app, why don't you? As well as davidicke.com, check out davidicke.com/headlines. Most of pretty much everything I talk about on this program tonight, covered in great detail on davidicke.com. The crew had a terrific day in Belgrade on Saturday, despite some of the problems that they had. I went into some of that on Sunday. So then, Dr. Barry Trower joins the programme today. It's an extended interview with Barry. He's a former Royal Navy microwave weapons expert, and he also debriefed spies who were captured in Britain during the Cold War. Now, during this time, and I must say, this was unknown to me, Barry also monitored the mail and telephone calls of prisoners at Wormwood. Through this surveillance of prisoner conversations, Barry learned that several well-known establishment figures were abusing children. Barry went on to share this information with Jeffrey Dickens, who wrote the infamous Dickens dossier. He handed it to Leon Britton. It was lost by the Home Office. Now, you might be aware of this, I'm sure you are. Today, every day, the British media is running down the historic abuse inquiry. They say it's a hoax, it's a witch hunt, but of late they've been saying that the historic abuse inquiry is actually having a negative impact on the catching of paedophiles today, paedophiles who are operating today. So Barry Trower joins this programme around about 1:30, and he's going to stay with me right up until the end of the show. Good to be back with you. Would have been off on Monday because Monday was a bank holiday. One or two other issues put paid to me doing Tuesday's programme. But as usual, there'll be an extra programme. Obviously, we'll be with you tomorrow night at 7, but I'm going to do an extra show on Friday. That's 5 p.m. Friday. That's British summer time, UK time on Friday. Okay, so keep that in mind for Friday. So all is good here then. Thank you for joining me. The cost of leaving the European Union is making all the running today in the British press and the British TV and radio broadcast mediums. Now, before we talk a little bit about that, Theresa May spoke outside Downing Street this afternoon. She'd just been to Buckingham Palace to see the Queen to get permission to dissolve Parliament. Yeah, think about that for a minute. Those of you new to this type of information and new to these programmes, think about that for a second. Let it linger. Don't cod yourself or kid yourself that it's all ceremonial. It isn't. Democracy, it ain't. We'll leave that for the moment anyway. So after being to see the Queen to get permission to dissolve Parliament and set in motion the election, which will take place on June 8th, she spoke to the press and she said the European Union, or elements within it, are doing everything they can to influence the forthcoming election. This is what May said.
I have just been to Buckingham Palace for an audience with Her Majesty the Queen to mark the dissolution of this Parliament. The 2015 Parliament is now at an end, and in 36 days, the country will elect a new government and choose the next Prime Minister. The choice you now face is all about the future. Whoever wins on the 8th of June will face one overriding task: to get the best possible deal for this United Kingdom from Brexit. And in the last few days, we have seen just how tough these talks are likely to be. Britain's negotiating position in Europe has been misrepresented in the continental press. The European Commission's negotiating stance has hardened. Threats against Britain have been issued by European politicians and officials. All of these acts have been deliberately timed to affect the result of the general election that will take place on the 8th of June. By contrast, I made clear in my letter to the President of the European Council invoking Article 50 last month that in leaving the European Union, Britain means no harm to our friends and allies on the continent. We continue to believe that no deal is better for Britain than a bad deal, but we want a deal. We want a deep and special partnership with the European Union, and we want the EU to succeed.
It is difficult to determine how much Theresa May and her kind other prime ministers actually know. Because again, without labouring the point, without dwelling too much on it, you and I know that her bosses and her bosses' bosses, bosses' bosses, we could be here all day, they want the UK to remain in the European Union. We know this. What does May know? I don't know. Are people like Theresa May more effective as puppets if they're not in on everything? I don't know. It's a good question. But yes, of course, Guy Verhofstadt and Jean-Claude Juncker and all the rest of them are doing their best to influence the forthcoming general election here. There's no doubt about that. What did Jeremy Corbyn think of all of this?
The risk to this country is a government that sets up megaphone diplomacy ahead of serious negotiations, that threatens to walk away from those talks if they don't go their way. Our view is you work with people. You don't threaten at the start. You start with the idea and the aim and the intention of reaching an agreement of tariff-free trade access to Europe and protection of very important workers, consumer and environmental rights that we have in this country.
Again, the idea is that we need a capital city in Belgium full to the brim of unelected bureaucrats to guarantee our civil rights and our workers' rights is insane. As far as the bullying and the threatening goes, Jeremy's got a short memory. We'll come back to that in a minute. What about Scottish First Minister Jimmy Crankey? What did she have to say?
I think Theresa May's comments are deeply irresponsible. You know, if we just for a second take a step back from the election campaign, the UK really needs the best possible Brexit deal because jobs and living standards depend on that. And yet the UK's negotiating hand is pretty weak. So for the Prime Minister to poison the atmosphere of these talks before they get underway and to do so apparently for blatantly partisan reasons, I think is irresponsible. I think it's reckless. It increases the chances of a bad deal or no deal. And it's ordinary people, the length and breadth of the UK, that will pay the price for that.
It's hard to see how Theresa May can be, how it could be argued that Theresa May is the aggressor. Now, don't misunderstand. Don't even start with the nonsense. I have no truck with any of these people. Most of all with the Conservative Party. But it's hard to see how anybody can make an argument that May is the aggressor. Again, more on that in a minute. Now, David Davis, the Brexit Secretary, has been saying again about the Brexit bill. He says the UK won't pay a 100 billion euro divorce bill to leave the EU. Davis said this today. That's 84 billion pounds, by the way. This is brief. This is what he said.
They've offered 50 billion, 60 billion, 100 billion. We've actually not been given an official number. Whilst we'll meet our international obligations, we'll meet the legal ones, not the best guesses and wishes of the Commission.
But will we be paying? We could be paying 100 billion.
No, that's not the case. I mean, we've come to the end of paying vast sums of money every year to the European Union.
Yeah, I think it's half a trillion. The UK has given to the European Union since way back when. £500 billion. Imagine it. Now, the EU chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, said there was no desire to punish the UK, but that accounts must be settled. And I'm not going to play you that clip. I was listening to him today, and I thought his nose must have grown an inch or two when he said there was no desire to punish the UK. Because Juncker, Merkel, Verhofstadt, and all the rest of them have been saying forever, well, basically since the UK voted to leave, that there has to be consequences. There has to be visible consequences for leaving to deter other countries from doing the same thing. Juncker said specifically that the UK would be and should be punished. This is a report from RT last month.
Well, this comes as the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, issues a stark warning about what the UK should expect from upcoming negotiations. In an interview with the German newspaper Bild, he said that Britain will be made an example of, suggesting that EU leaders will in fact be seeking punishment. He also said that Brexit will bring remaining member states together and reignite their love for the bloc. Theresa May has said that she's open to walking away from talks with Europe, maintaining that no deal is better than a bad deal.
Yeah, punish, consequences. That's been on the agenda since the UK chose to leave, since 52% of those who voted on the 23rd of June last year said they wanted to leave. Now, Freddie Gray is the deputy editor of The Spectator. Freddie Gray said, in his opinion, Brits don't like faceless EU bureaucrats telling them what to do. This is Gray.
I think that is looking increasingly likely, I'm afraid to say. And I think it's partly down to the silliness of Jean-Claude Juncker and the European Union. I think it was a very, very, you know, rather sort of petulant and arrogant act to leak that
So is Theresa May playing it right then by saying she's a difficult woman?
I think domestically she's going to win on this. Internationally she's got in a very, very difficult position.
Domestically win on this? Because surely wouldn't it undermine Brexiteers and indeed the election? All those may not have the confidence in Brexit after this.
I think the British people don't take kindly to faceless bureaucrats telling them how Britain should negotiate its negotiations.
Yeah, the bill, the 50 billion bill, is nonsense, and it should be called as nonsense. Not even the government is doing a good job of that. In actual fact, independent observers have suggested that the UK is entitled to about 9 billion, that's pounds, worth of funds currently held by the European Investment Bank. Funds that were put into the bank by the United Kingdom, which you should get back. And separate analysis has suggested that the UK is entitled to a further £14 billion worth of EU assets, including property, cash and other investments. And again, some economists saying that's actually understated. The UK, as I mentioned earlier on, has given $500 billion since it joined the European Economic Community. So it's nonsense. But what's behind it? What does it all mean? It means delay, 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 and more delay. And plant an idea in people's minds, particularly those people who chose to vote to leave on June 23rd last year. Plant in their minds the idea that maybe we've made a big mistake here. Maybe we are going to feel the effects of this further down the road. Maybe we need to have a rethink on what's been going on, what we've done. Maybe it's not a good idea. Traditionally, historically, the UK has been the second biggest donor to the budget. Effectively, the United Kingdom has been used as a gravy train by Brussels. That's a fact. It's not conjecture, that's a fact. 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The spending plans of the major parties under scrutiny today as well. The manifestos are imminent. What are the manifestos? Well, a manifesto is where a party explains where money will be spent, how the money will be generated, example, how much will be borrowed, and how much will come from taxation. So again today, the 24-hour soap opera news has been giving this massive coverage. So I put a meme out today about Jacob Rothschild. I could have chosen Evelyn the Rothschild. The meme was a joke, not a joke quote, but an imagined quote, what Rothschild would say if he was telling the truth. Of course, he's never going to say it in public. But basically, we don't care who you vote for, because these people must come to me or one of my minions for money. And I shared a link to an article on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/ The Richie Allen Show, there's a link to an article about the banks owned directly or controlled by the Rothschild banking dynasty. It's on our Facebook page. I think it was tweeted as well. These people don't care who is elected because those people must pay for their spending plans through taxation and through borrowing from the Central Bank of England. It's so important that people understand the futility of the electoral process. I don't care how nice Jeremy Corbyn is or any of the rest of them. I don't care if he really means that he won't raise taxes on low-income people. I don't even care if Jeremy says he'll stop persecuting the disabled, even though I obviously agree with those sentiments. And of course we shouldn't tax those who can't afford it, and we certainly shouldn't be taking benefits from people with disabilities. But Jeremy will announce borrowing plans. Borrowing, which no matter what happens, will increase the deficit, will lead to privatisation of more of the public assets of this country to pay the impossible debt. Because again, and we have to keep saying these things, it's almost like sloganeering. And I did accuse somebody else of sloganeering recently, but we've got to keep saying it. You know, when you create the principle out of thin air, but not the interest, and then you charge interest, you create an exponential debt spiral. What happens then must be paid for. How do we pay for it? State assets and austerity. Brutalise people with taxation to pay down the debt, which will never be paid down because you continue to borrow while you're attempting to pay it down. borrowing at interest. So the bankers couldn't give a damn who wins the election. Somebody posted on Facebook earlier on, heads they win, tails we lose. It's as simple as that. 20 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and Alternate Current Radio. What else? Facebook is to add 3,000 people to its community operations team. Why? To stop hate speech, child abuse and self-harm. Simple as that. Mark Zuckerberg. I'd love to know more about Mark Zuckerberg and who he really is. He said it had been heartbreaking to see people hurting themselves and others in video streamed live on Facebook. He said he would make reporting problematic videos easier. The BBC writes today, the move follows cases of murder and suicide being broadcast live on the social network. Did an old mate of mine once coin the phrase problem, reaction, solution? Because this fits it perfectly, doesn't it? A couple of videos get out there of people doing bad things. Solution is ready-made. We're going to bring 3,000 people in. They're going to monitor everything on Facebook. There's already 4,500 people doing that. So it'll be like 7,500 to 8,000 people doing it from now on. He also said there will be new tools, new algorithms to manage the millions of content reports it receives every week. And then the kicker. Facebook's moderators would contact law enforcement rather than contacting members directly if they felt they were at risk of harm. Facebook's moderators would call the old bill. If they don't like something on Facebook, think about that. I was thinking today, I was having a good think about this. This is game, set and match. This is pure Orwell, isn't it? And you know what needs to happen, but it won't happen, is that people need to get off Facebook, close their accounts, or at least stop posting your life on there and every thought in your head. Because they have thousands of people monitoring this stuff, tipping off the police. How soon before people posting about September the 11th, people posting about the Rothschilds, the aforementioned Jacob Rothschild, how long before people start saying on Facebook or some of these moderators, that's hate speech, that we need to have, he needs to be visited by the old bill to determine if he's a danger to anybody. Crazy. Mentioned this all the time, but I'm going to mention it again. Hayden Hewitt said it time and time again over the last few years. Facebook now is the internet. Going to leave that there. Need to oil my chair, by the way. FBI Director James Comey said it makes him nauseous, mildly nauseous, to think he could have had an impact on the presidential election last November. But Comey said he thought concealing the discovery of new Hillary Clinton emails would have been catastrophic. But he said it makes him nauseous to think that scuppered Hillary and helped Donald Trump. These comments came during a Senate panel on FBI oversight in which Comey faced questions about his inquiry into Hillary Clinton's private email use. Here's Comey speaking today.
This was terrible. It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election. But honestly, it wouldn't change the decision. Everybody who disagrees with me has to come back to October 28th with me and stare at this and tell me what you would do. Would you speak or would you conceal? And I could be wrong, but we honestly made a decision between those two choices that even in hindsight, and this has been one of the world's most painful experiences, I would make the same decision.
Yeah. I think we all know better now. It was all a ruse, and I was fooled as much as anybody else. I was properly fooled to get Donald Trump in. Ultimately, Hillary was the stalking horse. I think there can be no doubt about that now. In light of the flip-flop Trump has made on every single issue, changing his opinion, doing a 180 on every single issue. You know, you compare everything he said pre-election to everything that's happened since then. Hillary was the stalking horse. 24 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from Manchester. Multiple platforms, davidicke.com, ACR, and of course, TuneIn Radio. Very quick break, back with more in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back to the programme. 26 minutes past the hour. Before we go anywhere, I want to give a massive shout out to Shirley Crosby, who won't be listening right now. She's not well. She's at Providence Neurosurgery in Washington State. And I was introduced to Shirley through her daughter, Jen, who listens to the programme. And she's had a rough time of it, health-wise, of late, has Shirley. So sending out loads of love and all the best to Shirley in her recovery. Has an MRI scan today and a CT scan. Let's hope that she gets better real soon. So Shirley, thanks for listening, and thank you for the kind words about my accent. Somebody had to like it, Shirley. Thanks very much. I hope you get well real soon. And Jen, look after your old mum. It is 27 minutes past the hour. Some music when we come back. Barry Troer joins the programme. Important stuff this on Wednesday, April, not even April, it's May 3rd, that's the one. 2017, the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and alternate current radio. My name is Richie Allen. By the way, it's great to be back with you. Tweet at Richie Allen Show now. Welcome to the programme.
Somebody do
Especially for Shirley Crosby. Get well soon, Shirley. The Dandy Warhol's Bohemian Like You on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. The time is exactly 1:30. Thanks for joining the programme. We're welcoming back an old friend of ours who's going to spend the rest of the programme with me. Glad to welcome him back to the programme. This is really important stuff. I can't overemphasise that. Our next guest, our first guest, is a former Royal Navy microwave weapons expert. And as he's talked about on this programme in the past, he debriefed spies who were captured in Britain during the Cold War. The work he's done on microwave weapons, on Wi-Fi, on microwaves and the effects of those things on us is really important. It's stellar, in fact, really important work. During his time, he also monitored the mail and telephone calls of prisoners at certain prisons in the UK. And through this surveillance of prisoner conversations, he became aware that several well-known establishment figures were abusing children. He did share this information with Geoffrey Dickens, the author, former MP, of course, the author of the now infamous Dickens dossier, which was lost by the Home Office and Leon Britton. This is really timely because there is the media has gone into overdrive to claim that the allegations, the historic allegations and the claims that a VIP paedophile ring has been operating out of Westminster. The media are saying that's all a hoax, it's fantasy, it never happened. They went one further this weekend just gone. They in fact claimed that the historic allegations are taking up so much time and resources that paedophiles in 2017 are getting away with abusing children. Let's welcome back to this programme our friend, Dr. Barry Trower. Barry, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, sir. Yeah, sorry, I've just picked up the phone. Can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear, Barry. Thanks for coming back on the show. Good to be with you.
Okay, sir. How can I help?
Well, I want to start off, I mentioned in the introduction your career in the Navy, your career debriefing Cold War spies, and then I talked a little bit about how you came to understand that establishment figures and well-known people were abusing children. I mentioned your monitoring of prisoner communications at various prisons. I'm going to let you pick it up from there, Barry. Give us an overview of how you came to understand what was going on.
Can you hear me okay?
Barry, loud and clear, go ahead.
Oh, good. Just a slight error there. So I wasn't monitoring phone calls and mail, but they were being monitored. when I was looking for or talking to spies and international terrorists and international criminals, you must appreciate we're in the Cold War here. And I'm sorry that some of my answers are going to be fairly long, but they need to be. We're looking at Cold War spies, Cold War criminals, and so forth. I had access to what I call children from the age of 8 going up a few years that had been sentenced to Borstal. And what I did, because we were looking, the prime part of my work was to find senior figures in government who could be blackmailed by the KGB. That was really it. And in those days, and I hope I don't offend anybody by saying this, homosexuality or being gay was not only a criminal offence, but, I mean, it could carry up to 18 years just for being homosexual. And it's not 18 years playing snooker and watching television with the main prison population. It's 18 years in solitary under Rule 43, which means you're basically alone in a concrete box, sifting through every single meal for bits of broken razor blades and glass. And it is that. Now, if you had a prominent government figure who was abusing boys from the age of 8 upwards, and again, I don't wish to offend anybody or re-upset anybody, but some of the boys I spoke to, they were wishing that they could commit suicide just not to have any more pain. And I'm not going into the physical side of the abuse that caused the pain, but what all they wanted to do really was commit suicide or take drugs to take the memory of how much pain they had received away. Now, I spoke to these boys as part of my job, and my job was Sir William Melvin, 1911. I have no idea what the 1911 means. It just came with his name when it was explained. Sir William Melvin had a scheme whereby once people were sentenced, whether they were spies or criminals or boys, you could then talk to them. And I was a gentle talker. I would have coffee with them and I would talk to them over years. And we were looking for not to increase their sentences, not to incriminate anybody, but we were looking for prominent government figures who could be blackmailed by the KGB, namely ministers of war, ministers of security, this sort of thing, civil servants, people who could compromise the security of the country. Excuse me. And that was my job. Monitoring mail and conversations and phone calls was a part of it,
yeah,
but the main part of it was me speaking to them.
Barry, I'm guessing that you had to hear a lot of very difficult things from those boys. I'm guessing that the nature of what you were told by them, and again, we're not going to go into graphic detail, of course we're not, but I'm guessing it was difficult to hear, right?
Absolutely, sir, and absolutely correct. So I heard the graphic detail, and over an 11-year period, I passed, I think it was about 16 names of people who, if they were compromised, could put the UK at risk.
Barry, do us a favour. You're painting a brilliant picture here. Brilliant in terms of the importance of it. I don't mean brilliant in terms of what happened to the children, of course. Give us an idea. This 11-year time period, Barry, what years are we talking about?
67 to 78.
67 to 78. Now, these names, this is an incredible... I want our listeners to tweet at Richie Allen Show. Barry's with me till the end of the programme, so we will get to put your questions to Barry. Barry was doing this work to find out if senior British politicians could be compromised by agents of foreign governments, to find out, you know, the names of homosexuals and child abusers, to get a kind of a head start on the agents of foreign governments. And what he was hearing from these boys at Borstal's was horrendous. The boys were depressed, suicidal in some cases. Barry, were you shocked when you heard these names? I know that might sound stupid, but did you ever have any inclination, you know, even when you were in the Navy, did you have any idea, or was this new to you? Was this brand new information?
That is a brilliant question, if I may say so, sir. I've been in three conflicts, Borneo, Aden, and one in British Guiana, and I've seen quite a lot. But I was shocked to the point of nightmares with some of the stories that the boys were telling me. And I really couldn't believe it until I'd heard it several times from different boys. And I thought, well, they don't know each other. They haven't corroborated.
Yeah.
And I can't go into detail over the phone. But I was shocked at the level of pain that some of them were subjected to. And if I may make just a plea now, I gave evidence to the abuse inquiry last year, and I spoke face to face with the leaders of the abuse inquiry. And if anybody listening to this has been abused and they think it is absolutely pointless me going there because we're not going to get anywhere, I would say to them, and I am trained at talking to people and watching just about every facial expression there is, as they are trained to listen and talk to you. And we were watching each other carefully. And I would say, please, if you have any information, go to them and give your information. You may not think that you will get anywhere, but they are extremely professional. They are exemplary in the way they talk to you and listen to you. And if you stand alone, if a few people have the courage to go there and they stand alone against a very, very prominent person with a QC representing them, the chances are that you are not going to get anywhere. If you are amongst 25 or 30 people that have not corroborated, and you start telling the same story about the same person, because they hop from boy to boy, then what you're going on to, and I'm not a trained legal person, but you are going on to the balance of probability. And in front of a jury, the balance of probability will probably get you somewhere, whereas if you are up against a QC, you probably wouldn't survive. And I'd like you to ask me that, sir, if you would later, why you cannot survive against a QC.
Yeah, we'll definitely come back to that, Barry. I want to ask you this because we're going to go back. We're going to go back now. In a minute, we're going to go back to your time, 1967 to 1978. Before we do that, though, you've met with and spoken with Alexis Jay, who's currently chairing the independent inquiry. So if we leave to one side for the moment the conduct of the British media, which has been deplorable. You know, you have prominent presenters on television and radio declaring all of this to be a hoax, to be nonsense, which definitely, it could be argued, is perverting the course of justice. They shouldn't do that. But what sort of, what measure did you get of Alexis Jay? What manner of woman is she? Did you deem her to be, or did you think she was a sincere woman and that she's genuinely trying to or wants to get to the bottom of what happened? Must be pointed out, she's the third head of the inquiry, or the fourth, in fact. Go ahead.
I spoke to three people, and when I walked into the room, the three prominent people of the inquiry were there. I'm assuming they were introduced, but whilst I was sitting down and getting organised, to be honest, the names went straight over my head.
Okay.
But I'm assuming she was one of them, but they were three prominent people. but they are extremely qualified and extremely professional. And as I say, I would recommend anybody, please go to them. I wasn't going there as a victim. I was going there as an informant or a whistleblower, as you like. And you give your information under oath. It is taped. It is also recorded. And I was there for hours. And we covered an awful lot of ground, and I was able to put forward things that they weren't aware of. But I'm assuming the lady you said, and I'm not very...
We might have momentarily lost Barry there. I hope we haven't. We'll try and get him back. It's 15 minutes to the top of the hour. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of May. Barry Troer, PhD, was on the line. I'm going to dial him back up there straight away without wasting too much time. Let's see, do we get him back on the line? I'm getting call minder now, so he might have... we might have lost him. I'm thinking maybe he's got batteries in a handset. Maybe that's what's happened there. I hope it's nothing else, but we'll see. Can we get him back on? We'll try. I think we've actually reconnected. Barry, we lost you momentarily, but
yeah,
you're
that's
back.
Okay. Right, we're back now.
These things happen, don't they, occasionally when we talk about these issues?
They happen. Yeah, I know they do, yeah.
We won't dwell on that. So you were saying, you said that anybody who's got anything to say should go there. You were saying that you were there as a whistleblower, as an informant, to basically impart the information to these people that you're sharing with us tonight.
Absolutely, sir. Yep.
Hugely important stuff. This. I want to go back to the time that you spent meeting these boys and speaking to these boys at Borstal, and you described how horrific it was for you to hear it, how shocked you were that these people were being named. We'll talk about how you dealt with that information then, whom you gave it to. We'll do that shortly. But before we do that, Barry, presumably many of these people named by these young boys are dead now. Who did they name? Who were the names that were given to you?
You mean the names of the prominent people?
The names of the abusers, yeah. The ones that are dead.
I can't give you that.
You don't want to share that info.
I'm
not being critical of that, by the way, just in case.
Yeah.
I'm not going to criticise that. I'm just, you know, obviously our listeners are saying, Richie, ask him who.
Yeah, I was given 16, or I had over the time collected 16 names. And for the protection of anybody who may be innocent, because if you name somebody, they're automatically guilty. And I'm going back to a prominent pop star very recently, who is not on a list, but a prominent pop star who had his house searched by the BBC,
yeah,
and was publicly vilified and then found to be innocent. All I'm saying, I had 16 names, and I've always said, and I've said to the press, the only person I will give any of these names to is a High Court judge. And then if the judge chooses to release the names or the inquiry, that's fine. But I wouldn't announce them over the radio.
And I totally understand that. And it's the answer I expected you to give me. Our audience were expecting me to put that question to you. I expected you to say nothing else, Barry. I totally understand that. But we're talking about people, and I'm certainly not going to try and get any clues. I don't want any clues. We're talking about people, very well-known establishment politicians, very well-known members of society.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I can tell you that of the 16, we are looking at the very top of the civil servants and the government.
Now, tell our listeners what you... I mean, you're not an old man now. You were a very young man then.
Well, I'm in my 70s.
Which makes you, without patronising, you're not an old man. You're not an old man. So you're a young man. Then you're in your late 20s, early 30s when this was going on.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
What did you do with that info? Because you're hearing from different boys. They can't communicate. They can't share information. This is pre-colour television days. Well, maybe not pre-colour television days. There's certainly no internet. These names keep coming up. What did you do then with the information that you had, with that information?
Yeah, we're certainly pre-colour television. I was trained for 18 months under a Home Office psychiatrist, and I wasn't the only one. I mean, when we went out visiting places, we piled into five cars. So I certainly wasn't on my own. I was trained for 18 months under a psychiatrist, and then when I started talking to spies and these boys, nothing was ever written down. That was the golden rule. Nothing was allowed to be written down in case you dropped it or lost it. It went straight into your memory. And as soon as you had the information, there were only three people that you were allowed to talk to. Only three. And they were never all on duty at the same time. There may only be one doing over three shifts in a day. But there was always one that you could talk to, sometimes two. So when you had information, you approached one of the three people, which was now outside a security area. You gave your information to that one person verbally. That one person would then decide whether it went to the Home Office, the Foreign Office, MI5, MI6, wherever. Once you handed the information over, that was your part of the job finished. And you handed over information probably between 5 and 8 times a day over your long shift, which could be 10 hours. So you would hand over between 5 and 8 pieces of information a day, and you add that over sort of 11 years. It's actually quite a lot of information coming in, but nothing was written down. You only had three people, and you never knew where it was going. You didn't need to know that. All you needed to know was what you were supposed to hear that you thought could be a problem for the United Kingdom security, and you handed it over, and then you went back and got more. And that was it.
Well, you'd been around. You weren't, you weren't wet behind the ears at that stage. You were experienced. But did you expect it to result in a serious investigation, Barry? Did you think that, well, I've given this info now, I expect this to be properly handled and to be looked into? What did you think?
Well, there were three different answers to that. because spies and KGB, we understood that if you pick out somebody who you thought were being targeted by the KGB or something, you could understand why they stayed in office. Because if they stayed in office, you could follow them and you could see who the KGB agents were. Or if they were with an international terrorist organization or an international criminal organization, you wanted contacts. But the one thing that confused us was when it came to paedophiles, they were left in office. And after years, and you started to wonder why. And then, I mean, none of us were stupid. And we started to work out, and we came up with three different scenarios. And it could be that you forwarded their names and the information because they were blackmailable by the KGB, which they were. But it could also be that, let's say the information was being passed to somebody in one government or civil service office, and let's say the person that we were naming was in charge of finance, supposedly. It may be that if that one person knew that the person in charge of finance was now a paedophile and could go to jail for 18 years, and the children would come out of Eton and everything else, it would be very simple for you, if you were, let's say, in charge of MI5, to go to that person and say, I have this information on you. I need a new office block, and I need this, and I need 100 more operatives, or else. It could be that scenario. And the other scenario could be that the information was going to a person who was the head of an organization that was also a paedophile, and they were protecting their brothers. It could have been any one of those three. I didn't know. We just assumed that the job we were doing was legitimate and it was being passed to the appropriate authorities. And in this world, the less people you know, the better everybody likes it.
Yeah.
Because you can't make a mistake talking to somebody. So I only ever knew three people, and during the course of a day, I only ever spoke to one.
It must have occurred to you, Barry, to be speaking to these boys, it must have occurred to you that there were many other young offender institutions around the country. And you, being a man of intelligence, you must have thought to yourself, well, this could be an epidemic, really. I mean, go ahead.
It would be, because we started to look into this, the people I knew that were on my course, we started to look into this, and we thought, well, let's look at the common factors here. What you had was you had young boys. They generally had a criminal record. They were generally streetwise, homeless, orphans. When they were adopted, let's say, picked up and taken to a room, and I said this to the inquiry, it's very difficult for the boys because you're going into a room and the room is generally dark. It's not like going into a dinner party where you're introduced to everybody before you talk to them. You're going into a room. It is generally dark. Before you go in, you are usually given a drink or two. Yeah. If you take drugs, you're given drugs. That automatically protects the people in the room. Because the first thing any QC will say is, did you take drugs? Did you take alcohol? The answer is yes. And there is your credibility gone straight away for being a proper witness.
Your story is effectively compromised. Can I ask you this? And I just want to get this one out of the way. Did any of these boys give you any inclination that some of this was satanic in nature? Not all of it, but that some of it might have been satanic in terms of, you know, devil worshipping, costume wearing, that sort of thing, Barry?
No. But there was always more than one man in the room, usually groups of men, and the boys went from party to party. So I would think over the years, each individual paedophile would probably have handled scores of boys. And if you measure that up and down the country, you know, it's quite a lot. But we did, whilst I can't give the names, I can tell you about the men involved. And we did a survey of the names, and we found that, not in every case, but we found that the vast majority of the names that came our way, and they are easily checked with various books, we found that the vast majority were Eton, Harrow, Oxford, Cambridge, and we were loaned through a source, and I don't want to offend anybody here that is, but we were loaned a book of Freemason names, and they were also Freemasons.
To a man. Every one of them, right?
No, the vast majority.
The majority.
The vast majority were Eton, Eton, Cambridge, Harrow, Oxford, Cambridge, Freemasons.
Let me just do a quick recap, Barry. Grab yourself a quick glass of water there. It's going to take me about 30 seconds. Barry, okay. Dr. Barry Troer is on the line. Barry's a former Royal Navy microwave weapons expert. One of his jobs was debriefing spies who were captured in Britain during the Cold War. Barry was employed also to glean information from young boys who were locked up in Borstal, whether those boys had been sexually abused, whether they were in homosexual relationships with establishment figures, to prevent those establishment figures from being blackmailed by the agents of foreign governments. Barry obviously shared this information with his own up through the chain of command. He's just said to us there that the names, the 16 names of prominent figures, establishment figures, these men had pretty much attended Eton, Harrow, Oxford, Cambridge, the Ivy League, blue chip universities and schools, and that most of, but not all of these men were connected Freemasons as well. This is vital stuff because we don't do this very often on the programme, but I am and have in the past endorsed Barry Troer. This guy is telling you the truth as he understands it, and I can't pay a better compliment to any guest than to say that. We will eventually talk about Geoffrey Dickens and Leon Britton. We'll get onto that shortly. It's a minute past the hour, but before Barry comes back in, I want to play a very famous piece of audio, and it is Tim Fortescue, the former chief whip of Sir Edward Heath. Fortescue talking to the BBC in 1995, a documentary called Westminster Secret Service, and Fortescue basically saying that it was a common enough thing for MPs to come to the whips to say, we need some help to get out of trouble, and often that trouble was that the MP had been found to be abusing young boys. So Barry will be able to hear this, but I know he's heard the clip before. This is Tim Fortescue speaking to BBC Westminster Secret Service. Again, it's one of those audio clips every man and woman in the UK should hear. Listen carefully if it's the first time you've heard it.
Anyone with any sense who was in trouble would come to the whips and tell them the truth and say, now, this, I'm in a jam. Can you help? It might be debt. It might be scandal involving small boys or any kind of scandal which a member seemed likely to be mixed up in. They'd come and ask if we could help. And if we could, we did. And we would do everything we can because we would store up brownie points. That sounds a pretty nasty reason, but it's one of the reasons. Is if we could.
Barry, you could choke on the irony there. He first of all said that abusing boys was a scandal that an MP might be likely to be caught up in. And then he said, effectively, that they would blackmail those MPs. I mean, the irony of that. On the one hand, you're being asked to find out who these MPs are so that they can't be blackmailed by agents of a foreign government, and yet Tim Fortescue told the BBC, we blackmailed them. It's extraordinary to hear that, isn't it, Barry? Have we lost Barry again, have we? Have we interference on the line? We have. We might do. He might have gone to grab a glass of water. We'll see as he come back. Barry Troer on the line. Now, there are lots of tweets coming in on this. It's at Richie Allen Show, and it's richie@richieallen.co.uk. Tell you what we'll do.
Find them immediately.
We'll just get rid of the audio there. We'll take a very quick break anyway, because we're due a break. And when we come back from the break, we'll have Barry back on the line. Back in a minute with Barry Troer on Wednesday's Richie Allen Show.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place
High in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the program. Barry, you're still with us. Just before we were briefly disconnected there, we heard from Tim. We heard from Tim Fortescue. Ironically, in light of you were being asked to find out information from these boys in order to prevent the KGB or Mossad or the German intelligence agencies from finding out these guys are paedophiles. And the irony is, the chief whips of the main political parties knew that there were some of their colleagues, many of their colleagues were abusing boys, and in fact the MPs chose to blackmail those MPs to get them to acquiesce and to vote on certain issues in certain ways. When you hear Tim Fortescue saying that, I mean, because again, it's within the time period you described, 1967 to 1978, Barry. And in 1973, while Tim Fortescue was working for Edward Heath, Fortescue says it was a common thing for MPs to come to say, "I've been caught buggering boys, I need some help," and the whips would help them. What do you make of that?
I can tell you now. My MP here is a whip. If he's not the chief whip, he's certainly a whip in the party. I saw him 7 years ago and said, "I have vital information." When he was first elected, I said, "I have vital information. I would like 15 minutes with the Prime Minister. Here is a brief of what I would like to say." And I handed over some documents face to face. I had a letter back within just a couple of days saying the Prime Minister is too busy to discuss this, although it involved and does to this day national security. And he has refused to see me, meet me, talk to me for 7 years. And he is a whip. So there's your answer.
There's your answer. Barry Troer on the line, folks. Loads of emails, loads of tweets coming in on this. To see what other people are tweeting, go to twitter.com. It's a Richie Allen Show, all one word. This is serious.
Can I talk
stuff.
About QCs as well for people, that the problem they're going to have?
You can. Barry, we're going to go right up to the top of the hour. Can we come to that in a couple of minutes? Because I just want to stay.
Okay, go on then.
Yeah, I just want to stay with this because this is vital. And I want to talk about... I don't want to dwell too much on it. I always mention at this juncture that David Icke wrote a book called The Biggest Secret in 1998, and he named people like Edward Heath while Heath was still alive, Peter Morrison, Anthony Blunt, many other figures named in that book by David. Do you accept now, Barry, that, you know, evidence given by people like Michael Shrimpton in Michael Shrimpton's book Spy Hunter, other people who've talked, many victims have named Heath, said that they were on the morning cloud in Jersey. Do you accept, is it difficult for you to accept that the Prime Minister of the country was a serial abuser of young men and that some of those men disappeared in very serious circumstances? What do you think?
Well, you have to be very careful here because you mentioned the boats, morning cloud. Now, the fact that the boat has been used, and there's no denying, because it's been on the news, that boys were taken out on the boat. But there are different arguments here. The boat was taken out and it's been on the news. Now, excuse me. If the boat was taken out and it had boys on, it doesn't mean that it was with the Prime Minister's permission, and it doesn't mean the Prime Minister was there. It does mean that men were there, and it meant that people who had access to the boat, who would have been top people, would have been there. But there is an even more intriguing, and I did bring this up with the inquiry, there is an even more intriguing argument, because we're in the days when people were blowing up MPs. And being a prime minister, you have top security clearance. Now, if you and I wanted to stroll down to the jetty and take out the prime minister's boat, we would have been stopped by special branch. We would have had to have shown permission. They would have counted and checked everybody on the boat. They would have monitored the boat going out. They would monitor the boat coming back for security reasons, if no other than security reasons, and they would check everybody off. And the question I asked is, now, I don't know who went on the boat, and I don't know how many boys went with them, but Special Branch would have names. They would have passed the names up the chain of command. Now, that is a paper trail. And what I want to know is, if the Prime Minister's boat went out, and we are told it did, we're not told he was on it, and I'm prepared to believe he wasn't. But
Barry, can I just jump in there? I believe that's an untenable thing to say, because we know that Jimmy Savile was taking children out of Haute de la Garenne Children's Home and was supplying boys to Edward Heath. There's no doubt about that. I think there have been so many people come forward over the years to say this, and I take your point absolutely about, you know, special branch people writing names down, and that there would be a paper trail, and that people in intelligence circles would know all about that. But there's an abundance, there's an enormous amount of evidence that shows that many of these children never returned. We know this now, and I'm not suggesting that Edward Heath himself in any way had anything to do with the murdering of those boys. But Michael Shrimpton, many other people in Jersey have come forward to say that, you know, somebody threw those boys overboard off of that boat. And more than likely it was the very Secret Service Special Branch people there to, you know, protect Heath in the first place. And this has been linked, of course, to the European Union and the UK's accession to the European Union. I think Heath, as much as Anthony Blunt and some of the other names we mentioned, I think he's been, you know, banged to rights as a serial abuser of boys. And because I mentioned Savile, just to get this one out of the way, was his a name that you ever heard mentioned at all, Barry, during the time period? You never heard his name, no?
No.
Yeah, I suppose you wouldn't have either, yeah. And the access Savile had, of course, to people like Heath and the royal family. But, I'm just going to make that point. I'm convinced from what I've read and what I've learned in the last 10, 12 years that Heath was compromised. Michael Shrimpton believes by German intelligence. Others believe it was to do with the European Union. But, like I said, he was named, and all of this was presented in David's book, The Biggest Secret, in 1998, while Heath was alive. And Heath, it was read to Heath what David Icke had said about him, and Heath just declined to comment on it. But, you know, we could split hairs about that. The fact is, it was endemic, wasn't it? It was endemic in British public life.
Well, it was endemic, and there are certainly many, many paper trails, and it's the paper trails that we need to track down.
How do you go about that, Barry? I mean, a guy of your experience and your knowledge, and like I said earlier on, it's unimpeachable. You know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I'm absolutely convinced of your authenticity and your motivation for doing what it is that you do. I've no doubt about that. But like, let's take the Dickens dossier, for example. We know what happened to that. Geoffrey Dickens, MP, gave a list of names to the Home Office of prominent abusers. I mean, you can talk about that before we come on to QCs, which is important. We have plenty of time to do that. But I'd like you to talk a little bit about the Dickens dossier, what happened to that. And I mean, that was huge, that. And again, it speaks to the levels of corruption within government, that information could just disappear, be torn to shreds, be burned, or whatever happened to it. Talk to us about that, Barry.
Well, this is where you are. the moment you mention a document, and this will go on, and I can tell you usually what happens. If you have evidence, somebody will usually say, tell me what it is, and I will pass it up the chain, and if it is important enough, then I will let you speak to the person that you need to speak to. And a mistake that people make is that they will start telling people the evidence they have, which may be names or dates or times or places, and then you hear nothing. And you'll find that by the time you get to the person that you want to get to, which is maybe years and years and years later, after much effort, you will find that the names have disappeared, the places, all the documentation has disappeared, because any government or any government organization that has secrets, they will have what we would call moles in place, usually in inquiries, and they will be the mail openers or the people that the mail openers pass it to, or somebody who sifts what's important and what isn't. But they will have moles, and they will sift out the important stuff. They will pass it on, but they will also inform whoever it needs to be informed, get to this cabinet, destroy these documents straight away, because somebody's going to come looking for them in a year's time. It's that sort of thing. And it's not difficult to do. And as soon as any government says, we will set up an inquiry, I think, yep, you're going to set up an inquiry, and it's going to be independent, but you're going to have certain people in key places who are going to feed back information before it gets to the main person.
Barry, you're a man of integrity, and you're a man of law and order. We have a Prime Minister today talking about the European Union, and every time I look at her, I see her as the woman who appointed Elizabeth Butler Sloss and the first chair of the inquiry, both of whom had ties to people whom were suspected of child abuse. We're talking about perverting the course of justice right there. I mean, we're on the fourth chairperson now, chairwoman of the inquiry. For my money, those behind this endemic child abuse will do anything they can, and there's plenty they can do, to prevent the truth from ever coming out. I mean, you talk about the Dickens dossier going missing. You talk about people being appointed to, Fiona Wolfe was the one I couldn't think of, Fiona Wolfe and Elizabeth Butler Sloss, both of whom had ties to the Britons and to others, people strongly suspected of it. It's such a cesspool of filth and corruption, isn't it, Barry?
Well, and you also had Lady Justice Goddard from New Zealand.
And Goddard, yeah. She was the third, yeah. She was the third appointee. Went, and now we're left with Alexis J. So, we, just before we come on to talking about victims and what victims should do and the perils of trying to take these cases to court and all of that, just a very quick recap. Barry Troer is on. Barry's spoken with me many, many times over the years about Wi-Fi, microwave weapons, their deployment, their capabilities, their use, where they're used, how they're used, the dangers of them. Of course, smart meters, all of that. Barry's an absolute expert. Go to youtube.com. You'll see our interviews with Barry over the years. Barry, when we talk about the use of child abuse as a form of mind control And you've often, and you've written extensively about mind control through technology, through these microwave weapons and Wi-Fi. Do you see how child abuse could have been used as a kind of a form of trauma-based mind control against various individuals? What do you think?
To be honest, I don't know the answer to that. If you're talking about mind control using pulsed and microwave frequencies, specialized frequencies, I can talk all day on that. But if you're talking about mind control using some form of physical abuse, that's really into sort of deep level psychology. And to be honest, I don't know the answer, sir.
Fair enough, Barry. Barry, I want to mention one thing, and then we're definitely going to talk about victims and what victims need to do, because I think the media, I mean, we talk a lot about the media on this programme. The levels to which the media has sunk in this country, trying to pervert the course of justice by insinuating that it's all fantasy. I just want to make two things clear here. It's very important to remember. Wiltshire Police are heading up Operation Conifer, looking into the allegations against Edward Heath and others. And Superintendent Sean Memory went on sick leave in January of this year, only a few weeks after he was put in charge of the Operation Conifer. That's an £800,000 operation probing Edward Heath and others. Now, that stunk to the heavens, Memory being taken off the inquiry and being put on long-term sick leave. But since then, the guy who took it over, a guy called Mike Veal at Wiltshire Police, to his absolute credit, has said that he believes the victims, the many victims that they've interviewed at Wiltshire Police who made claims against Heath and others around Heath. So again, we're talking about the levels with which or to which the establishment will go to keep all this under wraps. So Barry, from a victim's point of view, if you've been a victim of one of the 16 men or women that you know of yourself, or whether it's somebody who's in politics today or who has recently left politics, what must be going through the minds of victims when they see the media coming down on this, saying that this is all fantasy, this is all nonsense, and not only that, but these historic inquiries are actually impacting on inquiries of into paedophiles who are operating today. I wouldn't want to be a victim, Barry, because, you know, I wouldn't expect any claims that I made or any evidence I gave to be taken seriously. Talk some about that, and then talk about why QCs, why barristers are so important in all of this.
Right. We're going to wrap all this up in one big answer here. If you are, and the victims need to listen very carefully to this. If you are a victim and you are going forward, you need to be incredibly brave. You need to be incredibly fanatical in your pursuit to get the justice that you want. And there is a very, very common and old saying that justice is like the doors of the Dorchester, open to everybody. If you are, let's say you are a prominent person, and I'm going to give you the process here. If you are a prominent person and you are warned that trouble is headed your way because you are being accused of abusing a child, the first thing you're going to do is go for your QC. And a QC, and I don't know what they cost, but an ordinary solicitor down here in the West Country is £400 an hour. And goodness knows what QCs cost in London. But you go for a QC. Now, let's assume that I am a QC and somebody has come to me to say, protect me. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to discredit the person making the allegation. It's exactly the same with scientists. When scientists go against government scientists, the first thing the government will do is discredit them. And they really, really have a field day going against me. So you are a victim, and the first thing any QC is going to do is discredit you. Now, what the QC is going to do, and I am a QC, I am going to say, right, I want all of this victim's school records. I want to know the behavior of this victim of at school. Because if you've been a troublemaker and a liar or a truant person, that helps me. I'm going to insist on every one of your health records from day one. I want to know if you have taken drugs, if you have any drugs that could make you exaggerate things, lie. I want to know what illnesses you've had. I want to know just about everything about you, because that will help my case. I want your employment record from day one. I want to know whether you've missed days at work, whether you've been in jail, whether you've been unemployed, whether you've been whatever. I want your full employment record. The next thing I want is your prison record from day one. Then I start looking at all of that, and I pick out things that will make you look like you can be discredited in front of a jury up against a very, very prominent person. And the chances are that you have taken drugs, you have truanted from school, you have lied to the police or something, and on the face of it, you would look like you were standing alone and you didn't have a chance. And this is why I say to you, go to the inquiry, because on your own, and I said this, up against a QC, you could be in trouble. But if 25 or 35 or 55 of you stand in front of a jury, and it now comes down to the balance of probability, because you haven't corroborated and you are all telling the same story and pointing to the same person, then you can win with the balance of probability. The fact you've taken drugs or you've been in jail or you've been reprimanded by the police or whatever else, you know, the other people can support you. And you have the balance of probability, which, as far as I know, is English law, and you can win. But if you decide to opt out and drop out and you leave just one person, the chances are they're going to get away with it. You have got to trust the inquiry. They are exemplary. I've spent hours studying them as they studied me. And it doesn't matter what your background is. Whether you are the worst liar in history, with this they will believe you and they will corroborate it with other people. And when they corroborate it with other people, they can move ahead. So I would say to any victims here, go ahead, be brave, and it will make it easier on you, because once you've told somebody and you've got it all out of your system, you will feel better. At least you know you've done something. And it's better to try and fail than just shrug your shoulders and walk away and just live with whatever hell you're living with.
I totally endorse that. I couldn't pick a hole in that at all, Barry. I think you're absolutely right. There's only the glaring but, the obvious but, though, is these people will do anything, Barry, to prevent this information coming out. We know, or at least, well, we know in some cases they've murdered. In other cases, they've obfuscated, they've tied things up in red tape, and certain people have died conveniently. My worry about this is we're on the fourth chair of the inquiry. How long before Alexis J says, well, I've had enough of this. I've had enough of this because we're being stonewalled. We're not getting access to documentation. We're not getting access to men and women. And it rolls on and on and on and on. Before you and I know it, Barry, we could be in 2022, 2024, and all those wonderful men and women who've come forward in courage, which I absolutely endorse, they should do, no matter what they should do. But my worry is, Barry, that we're never going to see a proper conclusion to this. In the right, and I'll tell you why, Barry, because I think if the British people come to the understanding that the establishment, the aristocracy, the political class have basically been abusing, raping, and in some cases murdering their children, we'll have a proper revolution. I really do believe that. I believe that is the, that's one of the big gates, you know, at the castle wall. That's one of the big gatekeeping things, is the whole paedophile, institutional paedophile scandal. I just don't trust these people. Yeah. You know, I don't trust them.
Yeah, I can answer that. When Lady Goddard left, there was an article in the paper, and she said one of the reasons why she gave up and left, she said that the problem is wall-to-wall QCs. Now, when the QC is representing somebody, and let's face it, they are doing their job. They are doing what they are paid to do. When the QC is representing somebody, and they start sending for school records, work records, and whatever, and then when they've got those, they start wanting witness statements. We're not talking years, we're talking decades. We're talking decades here. And oddly enough, I had an article published on this. I think it was just this Christmas, this last Christmas. I wrote an article for a science journal called Active Denial. Now, active denial is... it's used by several governments. We use it, the Americans and the Canadians certainly use it. And when the government is in a fix, it uses this active denial program. And active denial means that they will try and take 50 years before anything will come to court. I have known in my lifetime 8 active denial programs to come to the English courts. Recently, in the last couple of years, it was the abuse of 20,000 service personnel, our military personnel, which came. It was the experiments on the genitals of gentlemen in the Congo. And just a few months ago, going back 50 years, it was the illegal irradiation of men, women and children to see what effects it had on all sorts of biological processes. And I think the judgment has still not been quite reached in that. But active denial takes 50 years, 50. So whenever our government is in some sort of a fix, it tries to strive to make everything last 50 years. And with all due respect, it's not difficult for a barrister writing one letter a month or one letter every several months and asking for inquiries to make something last decades.
Decades, Barry, meaning that these people will be dead. Many of the victims will have been dead, and I hate to say this, but it's my belief that the ritual abuse of children by the establishment in this country continues today.
Oh, absolutely. And when an active denial program, and you'll be familiar, one of them you're familiar with was MK Ultra.
Yeah.
I mean, that took 50 years. but when they come to court, the people representing the government, they always come up with the same three things. The first thing they come up with to the judge is they say, well, everybody involved is dead. Who are you actually going to charge? And if that doesn't wear, they say, well, memories will have been impaired. The evidence cannot be just. And if the judge brushes that aside, they generally come up with the Official Secrets Act and say this person comes under the Official Secrets Act. No information will be given, sorted out of court. Any victims pay some compensation, and that's the end of it. and that's the way it goes. It's a 50-year program. I have known eight of them. It wouldn't surprise me if this is on it. And the fact that you cannot win doesn't mean that you should not try.
Yeah, and I do see a kind of a logic in there, because by coming forward and telling the truth about what happened, it's keeping it active. You know, it's keeping it alive. And I don't mean in a negative way, but it's keeping that information out there. You know, there's some sort of energy, there's some sort of positive energy to it, I think. And I totally agree with that, yeah.
There is, and I mean, even if you die and the people die, then if there is compensation to be paid, it can go to your descendants, it can go to your children, to help them recover from whatever they've put up with, you know, dealing with you. There is always a reason to keep it going. To me, it's a bit like the French resistance during the war. You know, I mean, initially, you know, you've got a small band of people up against the mightiest army on the planet at the time. But in the end, they won. And it is now, when you look, it is the proud children that talk about their parents who stood up against the overwhelming odds that they could never, ever defeat. But they did. And it worked out OK. And what I'm saying here is, you know, you probably will not win yourself, but collectively, if you keep it going and you keep the case going, you will win, and you will bring their name up in court, and you will get justice. And you have to keep trying, because their aim, the aim of active denial, is to make everybody think there's no point in this, let's give up. And that is what their aim is, and that is what they want you to do.
This operation, this stonewalling you talked about, is being underlined by LBC Radio, various newspapers, other broadcasting organisations and presenters, constantly ramming it down their listeners' throats that the whole thing is a hoax, it's a nonsense, it's fantasy. It's horrendous. Again, I've got to mention, yeah, Barry, just very briefly, I've got to mention again, the current Prime Minister isn't fit for purpose. When she was Home Secretary, she appointed two people to the Historic Sex Abuse Inquiry, Fiona Wolfe and Elizabeth Butler-Sloss, two women she knew had ties to Leon Britton and others. That, by definition, is an act of criminality, and she certainly shouldn't be Prime Minister today. Dreadful stuff, Barry. You know, dreadful stuff to think that it goes on. So secure are these people in their belief that they're untouchable, that they can do whatever they want, that it still goes on. You know, tonight somewhere in this country, somebody from one of these institutions you talked about, from Harrow, from Eton, from Cambridge, from Oxford, from secret societies like the Freemasons, are abusing children, and they're doing it in the belief that they have immunity. It's heartbreaking to think. For anybody listening to this, you know. Go on, go ahead.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. But they cannot break the law all of the time and get away with it. Sooner or later, the bubble is going to burst. And when the bubble bursts, then, you know, they can be brought to justice. But if everybody gives up, then they are going to get away with it. The only thing victims can do is push ahead. And coming back to the media, it's not the people printing it and reading it on the news. It is the people who control them. It is the people who say, you will put this story out, but you will not put this story out. You need to go higher up, because the people who read it are told what to read. They don't investigate it. It goes through a very senior editorial process. And it is the controller of the media who say, you know, we will not do this, or we will not cover this particular topic, or we will only cover this particular topic. And it's generally based on finance or the golden handshake or some other information sharing. But there are always organizations that do tell the truth, and yours is one of them. There are organizations and there are papers that tell the truth. And in the end, you will win. But when you look at the media, they are only doing what is handed to them on a piece of paper. It's not the news reader or the person who writes the article that is necessarily to blame.
Well, you know, this program exists only to provide a platform for those people who have stories to tell, like yours. And that's a terrible tragedy, that, you know. I often think about that. You know, we do this, and there are other very good programs out there like this, and men and women are, you know, spending every hour under the sun to get these programs on the air with little, sometimes with zero funding, and struggling to get these programs out there through social media, through Facebook and elsewhere. And going up against that, you know, that media that we talked about. But that's what we'll continue to do, Barry, you know, because people need to hear this information. I mean, it's coming from somebody like you, somebody as credible as you. It's all the more important. I think people who ordinarily would rubbish this sort of information, when they hear guys like you, they think, well, hang on a second, you know, that guy, he's worked, you know, he's been in the Navy, he's done other things, he's worked for the intelligence services. Maybe I should listen to him. And as long as we're on the air, we'll continue to speak to people like you, Barry, you know. We were going to go to the top of the hour, Barry, but I think we're kind of coming to the end of it. I'm going to give you the final word. If there's anything else you'd like to add, the floor is yours, my friend, and then we'll part company for now. But I want to get you back on real soon to talk more about microwave and Wi-Fi. Yeah. Go ahead. You have the final word.
Okay, so I mean, the only thing I would like to say is, if you are a victim, be brave. Whatever you do, don't give up, because if you give up, you will live with your guilt, you will live with your pain, you will live with whatever disgrace you feel you have brought on yourself. What I would do is I will contact the abuse inquiry. Trust me, because I have spoken to them, I have analyzed them, I have spent hours with them, and you will feel better having spoken to them. Even if you just get it off your chest and you think, okay, I have told them, now my information can be used. And if 100 of you think like that, then they will have enough information to bring eventually a legal case against somebody on the balance of probability. The fact that you've been to jail, the fact that you are a junkie or have been, the fact you have been picked up for lying, none of that matters. The only thing that matters is that you are telling the truth about being abused. The other children are also telling the truth about being abused. It is corroborated. Forget your past. They will not judge you. I can assure you of that. They will not judge you on what you have done. They will only judge you on what you say to them, and they will know if you are telling the truth. Trust me on that. And if you do that and you band together, then you are an army of ants or an army of wasps. And then you can produce the sting that is absolutely necessary to get what you want. And it may not be in your lifetime. You may be my age before you get success. It's not going to be over before Christmas. But at least you have started the ball rolling down the hill, and at least you know you've done some good. And what I would say is, clear your mind, talk to them, and you will feel better.
Barry, I tell you what, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program, even speaking about things as distressing as this. Thanks for coming on. I'll be in touch with you in the next few days. I want to arrange another show soon. I want to talk more about Wi-Fi. It becomes more and more relevant. Thanks for coming on tonight to talk about that. For many of our listeners, it was the first time they heard it, and it's vitally important. Barry, look after yourself.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye for now. The terrific Dr. Barry Troer on the line to us there from his home. 15 minutes to the top of the hour. Now, Barry, as a Royal Navy microwave weapons expert and former interrogator of spies caught, Cold War spies caught in the UK, as part of what he was doing, interviewed boys in Borstals, in young offenders institutions, to get information about paedophiles in British politics so that they would know who could be compromised by agents of foreign governments like the KGB and Mossad, maybe, as an example. And through those interviews and chats with those boys at Wormwood Scrubs and elsewhere, Barry was basically came across the names of 16 very, very prominent establishment figures. This was in a period from 1967 to 1978. We've been speaking about that over the last 60, 70 minutes there. If you missed any of it, of course, the programme will be on podcast real soon, and we'll have the interview on YouTube as well overnight. Very quick break, back in a minute for more.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Welcome back to the programme. 11 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Wednesday, May. I keep saying April, don't I? I do that quite a lot. I don't move on. I had a problem at the beginning of the year saying 2017, didn't I? 2016 it was, until about mid-February. Anyway, it is May 3rd, so tomorrow is May 4th, which I'm reliably informed is a big day for Star Wars fans. Big day for Star Wars fans. May the 4th be with you. big day of cosplay. Is that what they call it? Cosplay? When people dress up as the various characters from various sci-fi films. Manchester has a couple of big cosplay exposés or expositions or conferences every year. A couple of times, Caroline and myself have had a good giggle. Not in a kind of a sneering, condescending way, not at all. But a good giggle at the extravagant costumes that people managed to find. The Princess Leia costumes, the Stormtrooper costumes, the Chewbacca costumes, and not just Star Wars, but everything else. Cosplay is a big deal. I'll tell you one thing, though. As a younger man, I would have been fairly mocked. I would have mocked people. I would have mocked people for doing that sort of stuff. But it's been my experience presenting this programme that people who are into Star Wars and Star Trek, the sci-fi scene, as it were, you know, Ridley Scott's films, the Alien films, all the other Stargate and all that sort of stuff, the people who like that, as you know, in terms of entertainment, they tend to be fairly clued in to what's going on in the world. That's been my experience when I've met people through sci-fi, you know, who've come on to me through the programme to say, oh, Richie, I listened to your interview with such and such a person. I listened to your interview about Mars or about this. And then they talk about stuff and you get the impression you're more likely to have a fairly good grasp of what's going on if you're a sci-fi fan. I don't know how much of that is true. I could be talking through my proverbial backside. Tiger Johnson tweets, thanks to Barry for him sharing all his knowledge on these issues. Thanks to Richie for providing the platform. I don't provide the platform. You provide the platform, because without your support there wouldn't be a programme. So thanks so much for supporting it. Faisal says, every interview like this brings more attention to the truth. Nothing can get better without knowledge spreading. Faith and hope matter. I think that's what Barry was saying. You know, that whether you get personal justice or not, it's important to speak publicly about the things that happened to you, the terrible traumas that happened to you, committed by these very establishment figures. David Dondre says, the only thing I'm left with after this interview is the feeling of frustration that nothing will ever come of it, he says. Hi to Gail, hi to Hubertes. A lot of tweets come in there that I didn't get. Luga, how you doing, Luga? Hi, Sean. Robert Watson, how you doing, Robert, as well? If you tweeted the programme today, thank you so much. I was absolutely wrapped up in what Barry was saying. Hi to Sheena Parrish. How you doing, Sheena? To Spirit Samba. To Colm in Dublin, who tweets a picture of Jimmy Savile with, presumably it's his knighthood, could be his OBE, but I think it might very well be his knighthood. There's some images there, some pictures being tweeted of Liam Gallagher from Oasis meeting with Jimmy Savile at some stage as well. A lot of people met with Savile through various events and various, I don't know, you know, awards ceremonies and awards dues and dedications and stuff like that. A lot of people met Savile and genuinely had no clue what Savile was into. But again, I'm going to mention, to find out about Morrison and Heath and Anthony Blunt and George H.W. Bush, you got to get The Biggest Secret by David Icke and read that. It is, that's the place to start, you know, when you're looking into this particular issue, when you're trying to understand this particular issue as well. Let's just see, a lot of tweets coming in as well. Field Mouse, how you doing? Lone Horse, Field Mouse, Barry Troer shows again establishment paedophilia was known about and the inquiry attempts to find out what they already know exactly. But however, we can't say for sure that the current chair of the inquiry, Alexis J., we can't say for sure that Alexis J. is part of any cover-up, at least not consciously anyway. But I repeat what I said earlier on, and it bears repeating. The Prime Minister of this country should be awaiting trial for perverting the course of justice, because she appointed Fiona Wolfe and Elizabeth Butler-Sloss to head up the inquiry, knowing full well those two women were connected to people who were suspected of abusing children. And in Britain's case, not only abusing children, but burying the Jeffrey Dickens dossier. And she's the Prime Minister. You know, that's the truth. You have somebody who willfully tried to cover up the abuse of children as your Prime Minister. And before anybody gets their knickers in a twist, I'm not suggesting for a minute that Theresa May had anything to do with child abuse. Not at all. Not saying it for a second. I don't think it. But she patently skewed or attempted to skew the inquiry into historic abuse by appointing people who were ringers. I mean, they were, weren't they? There's no other way to... You can't break it down any other way. I want to say a big hi to Marta Noakes, great friend of ours, singer-songwriter, brilliant musician, and great help to me and others in London at TPV Television some years ago. Martin, lovely to hear from you. Right, that's about it for the programme. Thank you for listening to it. Thanks to Aaron and Simon, my YouTube editor. The interview with Barry Troer will be on YouTube overnight. The podcast will be online really soon. I think Paul Craig Roberts is definitely among the guests tomorrow. Don't forget, that's tomorrow at 7 p.m. UK time. Don't forget, there's a special programme on Friday at 5 p.m. BST in lieu of me not being with you yesterday. Always endeavour on the rare occasion when we miss a programme to get another one in its place. And the new series of the Richie Allen television programme will be broadcasting next week. That's a week tomorrow, next Thursday. I'll tell you more about that on the programmes over the next couple of days. Until tomorrow then, thanks for listening to the programme. Look after yourselves and one another. I've been Richie Allen. The programme was produced, edited and introduced by me. Thank you. Bye now.